This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. With the trans celebrities Caitlyn Jenner and Laverne Cox in the spotlight, more and more individuals are coming forward with their own stories about gender ambiguity, which from a biological perspective is a lot more common than most people think. Studies at Brown University found that one out of every 2,000 people is born with ambiguous genitalia or other traits that fall somewhere on the male-female spectrum, but many of them grow up without knowing it. Doctors regularly perform surgeries on infants that will determine which gender that child will identify with for life. An increasing number of parents, legal experts, and bioethicists are questioning whether intersex babies should be operated on. The first public lawsuit on that question is scheduled for November. Azeen Ghorashi, a science reporter for BuzzFeed News and author of the article Born in Between, Should Doctors Operate on Intersex Babies? And Azeen, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Hi, thanks for having me.
But you focus on a lawsuit over a child called MC in the article, stemming from the circumstances of the child's birth. Now, what was the condition?
So MC was born with ovotesticular disorder of sexual development. It's an incredibly rare form of intersex. It's about one in every 20,000 babies are born with this particular condition. So it's basically that he has both ovarian and testicular tissue. He's pretty much split down the middle in terms of which biological traits are female and which biological traits are male. So it presents a little bit more difficult of a quandary for doctors at birth about what to do and sort of, you know, guessing what gender he's going to grow up to identify with.
And you call him he. What did they do for MC?
So MC was actually a ward of the state by the time doctors were trying to determine whether to operate on him. So the state was really making the decisions about his care, which is part of the lawsuit, actually. The doctors looked at all of his genetic information, looked at his anatomy, which included a penis and a vagina. It included one testicle and, like I said, both ovarian and testicular tissue. And they basically determined that he could have gone either way. If you look at the doctor's notes, when MC was 60 months old, they basically said that it was very, very hard to determine sort of which way he was going to swing, and they could swing it kind of in either direction based on how they decided to operate is sort of the language that they were using. One key thing was that he did have fairly high levels of testosterone at birth that are usually normal for males of his same age. But ultimately, they decided to go with a female gender assignment. So they removed all of his male anatomy and assigned him as a female. Of course, now I'm using the male gender pronoun. He is now 10 years old and identifies as a boy.
Well, Azeen, data from Brown University estimates one in every 2,000 babies born in the U.S. have a range of traits, you know, falling somewhere on this spectrum of male and female. But you found some doctors argue that it could be even higher.
Right. So it sort of depends on where you decide to draw the line on what is intersex and what isn't. Doctors and scientists are basically finding out that there are more and more and more ways that there isn't this perfect binary of sex of male and female. But some doctors do say that it could be as many as 1 in 100 babies that are born with intersex conditions.
Well, tell us about this lawsuit. This is Pam and Mark Crawford, who adopted MC, or are they foster parents?
They adopted him, yeah.
And the state of South Carolina. So what is the argument the Crawfords are making?
So they adopted MC. I think they brought him home at the age of 20 months. And he was, at that point, they had brought home a baby girl. They knew about his condition. And they actually, Pam had grown up and one of her friends had actually had an intersex condition. And so she was a little bit more aware of sort of the issues around it. First thing she said when she found out about MC's condition was, have they done surgery? And they said yes, and she was pretty disappointed about that. Mm-hmm. But anyways, they brought home this baby girl. They raised her as a baby girl until about the age of 4 or so. I think MC started sort of asserting a little bit more boyish behaviors, you know, playing with trucks and wanting to be on the boys' team and all these things that they didn't make too much of, just because Pam and Mark are both, I'd say, a little bit on the hippie side. They're like, you know, not one to dress her up in a pink dress or anything like that. They were definitely, they'd raised a tomboy before and weren't going to read too much into anything like that. But as he got older, he sort of started making these stronger and stronger assertions. He asked to have his hair cut like Dad's, which, you know, they explained that he might be mixed up with a boy, and MC said that he didn't mind. They went on a family trip to a water park, and MC begged his mom to please be allowed to exist there as a boy. At this point, I think the parents started to see that maybe there was something going on. And I think at the age of 7, he decided that he wanted to, that he was a boy, and that's really just what he was. So he went in front of his class, and he told them, and it was his words, actually, the born in between that we used in our headline was actually straight out of the mouth of a 7-year-old, which is about the simplest way to put it.
So what's the nature of the suit, and why isn't it against the doctor who made the decision?
So they are not suing over the fact that they got his gender wrong, right? That MC was surgically altered to be a girl and that he is now grown into being a boy. They are suing over the issue of informed consent. They are alleging that the doctors did not do enough to inform his caregivers at the time, which were social workers for the state of South Carolina and foster parents. They're alleging that they did not pose enough of an option of not doing the surgery and did not make clear enough the sort of potential negative consequences of doing the surgery itself.
In their mind, what would those negative consequences be?
Well, MC, for example, now cannot procreate as a male. Obviously, that's a big one. There's psychological impacts of the surgery happening. The possibility that he was going to grow into being a boy and the sort of gender dysmorphia that comes with that is something he's going to have to deal with for the rest of his life. He's going to have to go on to hormone therapy at this point once he hits puberty to continue to live as a boy. These are all risks that the Crawfords are alleging the doctors should have informed his caregivers of.
We're speaking with Azine Gureishi. She's science reporter for BuzzFeed News. And she wrote about a lawsuit involving a commonly performed surgical procedure on babies who are born intersex or with ambiguous genitalia. So the doctors make decisions pretty much on the spot. Are there any qualms within the field of medicine about this informed consent, you know, picking one gender over the other?
Actually, I mean, the standard of care has changed a lot since this practice pretty much started in the mid-50s. You know, the kids that were originally operated on when this sort of rolled out in American medicine, their parents kept it secret from them. The doctors told the parents to do was to never let them know that these surgeries had happened. You know, there weren't counseling services. There weren't all these things that now doctors will point out have really changed in terms of how we deal with intersex babies. Parents are now, at least at the good hospitals in the U.S. that are a little bit more forward-thinking about this stuff, they're given a lot more resources in terms of how to deal with their kids' condition and how to support them. And the parents themselves are supported. And some more progressive doctors, I talked to one guy out of UCSF in San Francisco, and he's sort of this new school that says that, you know, we need to only do sort of minimally invasive surgeries. They used to, if a girl was born with an extra large clitoris, for example, they would cut that down to make her look more acceptably like a girl. Now, Dr. Sandro in San Francisco, for example, he won't do that. He'll leave it alone. He says that doesn't meet the bar for what we should operate on. But he does do these sort of minimally invasive reversible surgery so that there is room left over for a kid to make a choice later on in life.
Is that the alternative, to do a minimally invasive surgery that can be reversed rather than just letting them go and be gender ambiguous until they can make a decision with their parents, presumably
right
later?
I mean, if you talk to the intersex activists, they don't even agree with what Dr. DeSandro is proposing. I mean, a minimally invasive surgery is still a surgery. Why are we operating at all? The issue of informed consent, if you take it even further, I mean, this is an infant that has no agency in terms of making decisions about their own body, right? They're
right.
16 months old.
Mm-hmm.
So the activists really do push that further to exactly what you just said, to let the kid have the choice and make the decision with their parents and their doctors once they are a fully formed human being, once their form of gender identity is more solidified.
Of course, this is, you said, been done since the 1950s. Is there any data at all on outcomes for people who did not have the surgery as a child versus people who had the surgeries?
This is also part of the problem, is that there's so little scientific backing for sort of whether this is a good idea or a bad idea. There have been a couple of studies. They tend to contradict each other because it's a really small sample size. It's both a rare condition and there hasn't been that much research into it. So doctors are really, as of 2011, are starting to sort of team up with researchers to determine sort of those long-term outcomes and see sort of what works best. A lot of what we do have is personal testimonies, and those are a little bit harder to make sense of, obviously, because people will peg them as the good eggs or the bad eggs. But, you know, there are some individuals that grew up without any surgical alteration, and I spoke to one of them for my story, and she claimed she lived a totally normal life. She said that as far as the differences she did have to deal with, you know, going through high school, a lot of the claims made are about that these kids might be bullied for being different. She said that, you know, the most different thing that was perceived about her was the fact that her parents were immigrants, and that was a much harder thing to sort of struggle with in high school.
It's a very big case, and I'm wondering what might happen if the Crawfords do win the case. Will it be so decisive that medical professionals will be forbidden from these surgeries or think twice about it, or there will be some medical ethical review board for making these decisions?
Right. I mean, no one really knows what will happen if they win, but they certainly won't be restricted by the law, in the sense that it won't be illegal for these surgeons to continue to operate. What will likely happen is that doctors will stop sort of operating out of fear of similar malpractice suits being brought against them. You know, if this is successful, it sets a precedent for more successful lawsuits, essentially.
Well, Azine, thank you so much. We'd love to check in with you after the case goes to trial.
Yeah, of course.
Azine Gureshi, she's science reporter for BuzzFeed News, and she recently wrote the article called Born in Between, Should Doctors Operate on Intersex Babies? There's a link to read her article along with some really interesting photographs at wordofmouthradio.org.